Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. This is Ken Hensley sitting in for someone that I've started calling without even thinking about it, the maestro for Patrick Madrid, who's off for a couple of days, is taking a bit of vacation. He's healthy, he's wealthy and wise, so you don't need to worry about him. My name again is Ken Hensley. I'm the Director of Pastoral Care for the Coming Home Network, chnetwork.org. The phone number, if you'd like to be on the show here, is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. And Mark, we were up against a hard break, and so I didn't want to end the call abruptly and ask you to stay over. And so let me just kind of conclude this, I suppose. You are right. Not only is Sam Harris having an effect on young minds, but of course Richard Dawkins with his famous book, The God Delusion, Daniel Dennett's writings, many. I mean, we have a situation, obviously, within America now where many, many young people, and there are probably a lot of reasons for this, are leaving their Christian upbringing and buying into essentially secular or even atheistic views of life. And these people have had a powerful effect on them. Now, I don't know about the crowd that was listening to Sam Harris speaking there, but, you know, and what they were, why they were clapping and whether they were Christians or clapping or not, or what was going on. But anyway, that's how I understand Sam Harris. He's taking moral categories and he's redefining them in other terms, terms that he thinks that science could actually develop for us. That is, what helps, what assists with human flourishing, what does not. And because of that, he ends up saying some strange things, like saying that Ted Bundy was only doing what he had to do. He's just like a crocodile that jumps up and bites someone, and you know, there's nothing moral or immoral about it. In fact, we should drop moral categories entirely, and we should just realize that Ted Bundy was just lousy at enhancing human flourishing. And the fact that he tortured and killed a bunch of women, we should drop the moral categories. So in other words, he does not believe in the existence of a moral law, but he's trying to find a way to have morality, you know, on another level. I think of Peter Singer as well, the bioethics professor, famous atheist professor, who wants to define right and wrong in terms of happiness. What increases happiness? What decreases happiness is wrong. What increases happiness is right. Again, the attempt to create moral standards apart from morality. Anyway, Mark, thanks for coming on the line, okay? Call back
in. Thank you. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good day. Okay. I want to give another illustration because I want you to begin to see how this approach can be filled out. Again, what for those who have just come on the line this hour, I'm talking about how I think about doing evangelism with those who doubt or deny the existence of God. And the way that I approach it is by attempting to put my finger, again, lovingly, gently, to put my finger on the tension that I believe exists in the atheist life, a tension between what he says about the nature of the universe in which we live, that it's all material, nothing but material, matter and energy, there's no spirit, there's no God, and what is true about him, that is the tension between what he says and who he is as the image and likeness of God, and what he knows because of that. And I was just spent some time talking about morality. In his heart of hearts, he knows that right and wrong are real. He knows that there is something like a moral law. He lives according to it all the time. And yet, as an atheist, he cannot account for it existing. If it really was true that there is no God, no personal God, and therefore no moral God, that the universe is nothing but particles interacting with one another, then morality is an illusion. Right and wrong basically amount to words that we use to describe what we have come to like or dislike, or what we think enhances human flourishing and what doesn't, or what we think will lead to more happiness and what doesn't. Another illustration I want to use, and another illustration that I use, is about the value of human life. Okay, I remember something happening. It was back in July of 2002. An explosion had ripped through a coal mine in Pennsylvania. This was a terrible situation. I remember it well. 9 miners were trapped 240 feet underground in a dark, partially flooded mine shaft. Okay, and everyone had their eyes glued to the TV set, watching this astonishing rescue effort that was immediately launched. Okay, engineers were brought in to examine the situation, to make recommendations. Environmental scientists were there to talk about the groundwater and to run tests. Massive drilling equipment was brought in and men who could operate it. Even the U.S. Navy arrived, bringing underwater experts, decompression chambers, in the hope, everyone working together in the hope that these 9 miners might be brought up alive. For 3 days, Americans sat pretty much transfixed in front of their TV sets as the engineers had to drill this narrow shaft the entire distance down, 240 feet, to the trapped miners. Here's the thing, if they miscalculated the angle of their drilling and they failed to intersect the small area where the men were waiting, it would be too late to start again. There would not be enough oxygen down there for the men to survive. Okay, finally the news came. The drilling had been accurate. They had reached the men, and as they were bringing up these 9 miners one by one up through this very narrow, I mean, so claustrophobic. I remember watching it and thinking I would have died from the claustrophobia. But as they brought them up one by one, the entire nation celebrated. I mean, it was impossible to be unmoved by this. And it was 9 miners we had never seen before. 9 miners we didn't know from Adam. And I remember distinctly a billboard appeared in Pennsylvania that simply read, "God gave us a miracle." Okay, I was talking about right and wrong morality. Well, here's another universal intuition that we share, the strong belief in the unique value of human life. I mean, we speak very naturally, again, just as we do about right and wrong, we speak very naturally of people possessing intrinsic value, inherent value, that is a value that exists in them, not merely a value that someone has assigned to them. We speak of them possessing high value and equal value. We talk about the dignity of each person. We use words like priceless, just very naturally, to describe our children, our grandchildren. This is simply how we naturally think, how we naturally speak as human beings. In fact, except in cases where maybe some human heart has been, by whatever means, just deadened and completely seared, this belief that we have in the inherent, high, equal value of human persons seems as natural to us as belief in our own existence, or belief in the existence of a physical world around us. And again, of course, the Christian theistic worldview, that is the worldview that we hold as those who believe in God, makes sense of our experience in this regard. Because if God exists, and we've been created in God's image and likeness, then we do possess unique value among all created things. In other words, the Christian worldview, I'll use a philosophical term, it provides a metaphysical basis, a foundation for what we seem to intuitively know and intuitively believe to be true. I think about Psalm 8, "O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man that you care for him. You made him a little lower than the heavenly beings. You crowned him with glory and honor. You made him ruler over the works of your hands. You put everything under his feet. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth." As Catholics, we believe that the truth of our inherent, high, and equal value as human persons is something that is true, objectively true, and something the knowledge of which God has etched into our very beings. It's something we simply know. It's something that everyone knows. But again, what happens to this belief? What happens to the inherent high equal value of human beings if there is no God, and if we are not the image and likeness of God, but instead nothing more than complicated animals that have arisen by chance from a chance universe? Okay, I'm going to come back to that in just a second. I want to go ahead and go to the phones here. We've got some calls that have come in. Let me see. Let's go to Rich first in Madison, Wisconsin. He's been on the phone the longest. Hi, Rich. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. I have to overhear your remarks regarding the professor who decided saying there's no absolute morality, but then he collapsed and you brought up the Hitler and the Holocaust. Well, many years ago, I brought a friend of mine to lunch who was serving as an organist in our church. She was not a Christian, mm-hmm. and she was leaving for another school. So we were chatting, the whole this topic came up. She was saying there's an absolute truth and absolute morality. And I said, okay, well, wait a moment. Are you trying to tell me that we can't say that Hitler's killing 3 or 6 million Jews, or the case may have been, absolutely wrong? Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and said, Rich, I hate to say this because I think some of my relatives died in the camps, but no, I can't say that it's absolutely wrong.
Yeah, there's an example, Rich, of what we're saying. Someone who has thought this through at least some distance, and she doesn't believe in God, right?
No, I don't think she believes in God. I mean, she's self-consistent in this respect. I mean, mind you, she lives a moral life and a rather conventional life, but intellectually speaking, she's just not there, and she does not admit to an absolute morality, even to that extent.
So she probably then has just, whatever she believes about the nature of the universe, she probably has just absorbed the popular view among so many now that, hey, you know, don't lay your morality on me. You know, morality is relative from person to person. It's my lived experience versus your lived experience. And it's sort of the inability to say that anything is, that right and wrong actually exist, that anything is absolutely right or absolutely wrong. You know, Rich, that reminds me of something. There's a book that came out years ago by Alan Bloom. It was called The Closing of the American Mind.
Yes, I remember that. I haven't read it yet myself, though.
Yeah, it was a very, very powerful book that made a big impression. He was a professor, if I remember right, at a university in Chicago or near Chicago. And what he said was, not only are we living in an age in which morality is conceived of as being relative, but he said even truth is conceived of as being relative. But he gave an illustration of the moral thing. He said, I think he said, I'm remembering this, I read it many years ago, I think that he said that when he comes into class, he will often bring up this moral issue. He'll say, do you know that in Indian culture, we're talking about the continent of India now,
mm-hmm.
although this doesn't happen often now, although it does happen still in some remote villages, it used to be that when a man died, his wife would be burned alive on his funeral pyre. Yeah, I believe it's called Sati, S-A-T-I or S-A-T-E.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, but that's, okay, when a man died, his body was being put on the funeral pyre to be burned up. His wife would be burned alive on the funeral pyre. And he said that he would ask his class, is this wrong? And he said the class would struggle because they had so deeply imbibed this feeling that if morality is not relative from person to person, you know, each person dreaming up their own moral system, it's at least relative from culture to culture and society to society. And so if this is what their culture did, if this is what they thought was good and right, who are we to say anything about it? And so, you know, this is the logical implication of saying, you know what? The ultimate reality in this universe is not an infinite personal God, a moral being who has created us in his image and likeness and has written his moral law into our souls. And there really is right and wrong. It does exist. This is the logical implications of rejecting that worldview. So I'm saying, when it comes to morality, in my mind, what we have is a clash of worldviews between a Christian theistic worldview that we would defend, and a materialist worldview that cannot defend any system of morality, really. They can redefine it like Sam Harris has, or Peter Singer, and they can come up with some standards, that can be applied. But even then, it's going to be person by person applying them. Anyway, Rich, did you have anything you want to say more about that?
No, I was wondering about one example, because that's kind of the acid test we all tend to use, I think, when dealing with people who claim there's no absolute morality. And she actually passed the test in a sense that she was consistent. And I just found it kind of shocking that she actually was able to stick to her guns that way. And it's frightening also that anyone, a decent person, actually would think that way. But there is a general confusion about and rejection of absolutes of any sort. Or if you have time for one more anecdote, I was at a campus student center many years ago.
Yes.
And somebody was giving a talk on Buddhism, somebody who had visited a Buddhist country. And in the conversation thereafter, there's all this conversation along the lines of, well, all religions are good, they all have good things. And I spoke, but I said, wait a minute, this is something very unhealthy here. And I said, all eyes turned toward me, and I said, listen, a religion is good to the extent that it conforms to absolute truth. And then a young man stood up on the other side of the circle, pointed to me and said, who's absolute truth, your absolute truth or my absolute truth? I mean, even understanding what the words mean is kind of lost on people. If for someone who's supposed to be college educated who can't understand the very internal inconsistency of what he's saying in a statement like that. But it's common.
Yes. Well,
it's common.
What can I say? That we live in a world now that is so fractured that there are just a million points of view coming at us all the time. Mm-hmm. And many young people, they're trained more from Hollywood than from anywhere else. That is the moral standards that they learn from TV shows and movies. The ethics that are sort of presupposed in that is what forms them. Anyway, Rich, thanks so much for the call. Call back anytime. The number here on the Patrick Madrid Show is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. I'm going to make another comment or two. I'm going to come to you, Rudy, on the other side of the short break here. But I wanted to just say, we're talking about the value of human life now and the innate dignity of human life and how it fits within a theistic worldview in which we've been made in God's image and likeness. It fits to believe that we really do have inherent high and equal value. But when it comes to an atheist worldview, where we're nothing but complicated animals, well, one of my teachers used to say, human beings are nothing more than the forward edge of the sludge of evolution. Well, what happens to that? I mean, what if we really are the accidental product of an entirely accidental material universe? What if we aren't spiritual beings at all? What if there is no soul? What if we're just chemicals? What if we really have, I would put it this way, come from nowhere, ultimately? And what if we're really going nowhere, ultimately? What becomes of believing in the inherent, high, and equal value of human beings then? Let's take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll continue the discussion on Relevant Radio, The Patrick Madrid Show, Ken Hensley sitting in.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cutteback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
I just heard Patrick Madrid's voice, and I thought he had stepped into the studio for a moment. It's loud and clear. No, Patrick Madrid's taking a couple of days off. He's just taking a little bit of vacation, and he's asked me, Ken Hensley, to step in for him and to sit in his seat. Okay, we're talking about the inherent high value, equal value of human beings, and the fact that this is something that we all seem to have an intuitive sense of and believe. And I'm asking the question, though, what would become of this if it really were true that this universe is just one gigantic material accident and that you and I have just evolved up out of the soup and we are nothing but material creatures, products of a material universe. As for inherent value, that is intrinsic value, well, this would be pure illusion. We may be more complicated, but we have no more value than a frog or a dirt clod. Okay, the only value that we would have in an atheist universe is value that we grant to one another, value that we subjectively assign to one another in the few moments that we have before the quicksand of this universe covers us up. As for high value, that is a value that is higher than the other created beings here, the other animals, the other creatures. Again, this would be pure illusion in an atheist universe. In fact, we would be committing the sin of speciesism by claiming that somehow human beings are superior to other creatures. And this is something that consistent atheists admit all the time. Listen to a couple of quotations. This is from Ingrid Newkirk, the president of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. She speaks of what her atheism implies for human value. I'm quoting Ingrid Newkirk. Animal liberationists do not separate out the human animal. A rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. They are all mammals. You get that, Cyrus?
I'm trying to follow along.
A rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. They are all mammals. Okay, that's what she as an atheist says, but I immediately wonder if she ran into a burning building and she saw a child over in one corner and a rat over in the other corner, which one is she going to run to? I mean, is she really going to stand there and think, oh my, who should I save first? After all, a rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. They're all mammals. They're all equal. Okay, here's how atheist philosopher James Rachels has put it. Quote, as Darwin clearly recognized, we are not entitled, not on evolutionary grounds at any rate, to regard our own adaptive behavior as better or higher than that of a cockroach, who, after all, is adapted equally well to life in its own environmental niche. You got that, Cyrus? Okay. You are not really, on evolutionary grounds, you're not really entitled to think of yourself, your wife, your children, in regard to their value as being really any higher or better than that of a cockroach.
Come on, man.
I didn't know that President Biden had come on the line. But anyway, okay. But this is what consistent, thoughtful atheists have to accept as true and to live with. This is consistent naturalism. This is what is simply true if there's no God and we are merely the accidental product of nature. But again, only a few would be willing to really live as though this were true. And it's because made in the image and likeness of God, we know better. But you know, when you think about it, is there any way to escape this implication? I mean, is there any way really to escape the implication once you have stated that we're just accidents? Is there any way to justify our continuing to think of human beings as though they possess this inherent high equal value, higher than rats and pigs and dogs and cockroaches? Is there any way to justify this belief without believing in our creation in God's image? Now, you know, I would say no as a Christian, but here are two atheists who agree. Peter Singer, again, who I mentioned, professor of bioethics at Princeton University, he doesn't think so. In fact, as an atheist, he has admitted that the Judeo-Christian doctrine of man's creation in the image and likeness of God may be the only foundation there is to support such an idea, that man has this intrinsic value, this high value, this equal value. And then here's James Rachels again. He agrees. In fact, he writes that with the rejection of the biblical worldview, quote, the traditional supports for the idea of human dignity are gone. The traditional supports for the idea of human dignity are gone. They have not survived the colossal shift of perspective brought about by Darwin's theory. A Darwinian may conclude that a successful defense of human dignity is most unlikely. Let's go to the phones here. First of all, Rudy calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're on the Patrick Madrid Show, Rudy. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. I just wanted to bring up a couple things. One, just thanks for being concise. I think it's really nice to hear that. People talking concise about difficult issues is something that I have a hard time even bringing up in everyday life nowadays. I'm 38 years old, and it's as if no one talks about anything of any substance or truth at all. But I also did want to mention that, you know, even with Sam Harris and these guys who I, you know, I'm very familiar with, and it's like there's this great scientific minds, but yet at the same time they're always stopping the buck, you know. Because even if there were, even if we were sludge or particles, where did those particles come from? Where did that sludge come from? And then it comes from, well, you know, linguistic. I mean, words can be clumsy. I mean, we can talk to somebody in another country or even another state sometimes, say the exact same thing, and we'll both walk away with different meanings. So, you know, I just think that there's always this point where there's the buck stops, right? The compassion ends. And that's the opposite of what should happen, right? So
yeah,
that's all.
Rudy, thanks for your comment. Thanks for coming on the show today. And yeah, I can only say that I relate to what you're saying intensely. And you see it in so many areas. But this is what makes me, or this is what confirms my belief that people do not really start, and this applies to everyone, people do not really start with one piece of evidence and then another, and then another, and then another, and then come to a conclusion about their worldview. People absorb a worldview in many, many ways, from the people around them, from the movies and the television, from the professors they've had in school. And when they come to a worldview that they think makes sense, then they begin to interpret all the facts in the light of that worldview, okay? You know, I've given an illustration before to show the real collision of worldviews that exist between an atheist and we who believe in God. I've imagined that Richard Dawkins, well, I won't use him. I'll just use Atheist A. Imagine that Jesus rises from the dead in a room right in front of us. I'm standing on one side, and the atheist is standing on the other side of the room. And Jesus, we all know that he's been dead 3 days, okay? And he's dead. We both agree with that. And then he rises from the dead right in front of us. As a Christian, I'm going to say, see, miracles occur. There is a God, and a miracle can happen. The atheist is going to look at me and say, huh, strange things happen in a chance universe. Give us more time, and we'll come to understand scientifically how a corpse came back to life. You see what I'm saying?
But that doesn't make sense.
Well, I'm just saying that the worldview you have is going to give you the interpretation of a fact, all right? And no,
right.
I mean, it doesn't make sense, but it does make sense. And in fact, I will go to Richard Dawkins. He said in one of his books, he said this. He said that if he was walking by a church and he saw a stone statue of the Virgin Mary wave at him, okay, you get the picture? A stone statue waves at him. He says he would rather believe that all of the atoms in the arm of that statue just happened to move in one direction and then back the other direction at the same time. In other words, that it was a natural event with a natural explanation. He would rather believe that than to believe that a miracle was occurring. Which is basically a way of simply saying, I am utterly committed to a materialist, naturalist view of the universe, and anything that happens, I will interpret in natural terms, not in supernatural terms. You were about to say something, Rudy? Go ahead and make the...
I'll give you
the final word, because I need to go to a couple other callers as well. Go ahead.
If that's the way it is, then you know. I mean, how did? Yeah, I'm sorry. Now I got no last. I got no good final words. That's for you. You take it.
Okay, Rudy. Thanks for calling in. Actually, I think that what you said there at the end was quite eloquent. Just sort of stuttering and stammering and realizing, what can you say? I'm only giving an illustration of someone who has thought it through and is thoroughly committed to a materialist worldview. This is how they're going to see the world. And that takes me to Ruben down in Riverside, California, calling in, because this actually fits very beautifully. Ruben, you're on the air. Ruben from Riverside, California.
Looks like he dropped.
Okay, Ruben dropped out. He saw the taco truck come by. I would do the same thing. And he ran for the hills. Anyway, because he was asking a question about Jesus doing his miracles by magic. And that kind of fits in. It looks like Ruben's calling back. He was on the line for a while. So, Ruben, you're on the line. You're on the Patrick Madrid Show.
Oh, this is...
Welcome.
Hey, this is Ruben.
Yeah, Ruben from Riverside.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
This is Ruben?
Yes.
I want to say, first of all, excellent show. I've learned a lesson. I never thought I'd be learning today. I'm always happy when I learn something brand new.
Good.
And great show. To my question, you know, atheists are the hardest ones to talk to or, you know, try to get on the same ground with. And there was an atheist who doesn't even think about where we came from and just we're here. It doesn't even argue the fact that we're here, but there's nothing where we're going and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, brought up the fact that Jesus performed magic acts back in the day. Specifically, he harps on at the Canaan wedding festival that he just performed a magic act, turning water into wine. And I go, you know what? It was divine intervention. It was a miracle. He goes, all in all, it was a magic act, wasn't it? And I just couldn't counteract anything after that. How would you have responded?
Well, you know, I'm not sure exactly. I'm not the smartest guy standing here. You know, what you've given here, Ruben, is just another illustration of how people will interpret facts in accordance with their worldview, their view of things. And so this kind of makes sense. He's a committed atheist. And therefore, as a committed atheist, anything that appears to be miraculous cannot be, right? It can't be. There has to be a natural scientific explanation for what happened. And so he says Jesus was performing magic tricks. And I doubt if what he meant by magic was magic in the sense of someone actually controlling nature in some strange way. Do you think he meant that, or do you just mean a sleight of hand that he was performing a trick like the guys in Vegas? You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get into that. I just go, well, you know, it's hard to counter that statement. You know. So.
Well, what I'm describing here, and I'm talking today, and I'm really glad, thanks for the kind words. I'm glad that you felt like you're learning something today, Ruben. But what I'm talking about here today really is how to do evangelism with those who deny the existence of God, or at least one way to do evangelism. And what I'm saying is that I believe that the atheist lives in tension, okay, because he says that the world is nothing but material and all that, and yet in truth, he's been made in the image and likeness of God, and he knows a lot of things that make sense within a worldview in which God exists, but they don't make sense in an atheist worldview. And I feel like one method of doing evangelism is to try to place my finger on these points of tension. So I will talk to an atheist about morality. And what I'm doing is I'm attempting to lead him to see that he will have to abandon belief in right and wrong if he wants to be a consistent atheist. And this is something that's going to bother most people, because most people really believe in their heart of hearts that right and wrong are real and that morality is a real thing. And when you lead them to see that if they really want to be a consistent atheist, they have to abandon it. You know, they have to basically say, look, you know, it's right and wrong. These are nothing more than words we use to describe what we like and don't like. Then it will affect them. And the same thing with the value of human life. You know, every one of us believes intuitively that human beings have inherent value, that we have high value, and that we have equal value. Well, what are the grounds for saying that human beings have equal value if there's no God and if we're all just evolved creatures? Why would we say that human beings all have equal value? I mean, some are smarter than others, some are more talented than others, some produce more than others, some work harder than others, some are lazy and don't do anything. Wouldn't it be natural to say that human beings do not have equal value? And yet, that's an abomination. I mean, there are atheists that fight for the equal value and treatment and dignity of human beings all over the world. And what I'm saying is, they can't account for it, though, on their atheist, in terms of their atheist worldview. And with that, Ruben, thanks a lot for being on the phone today. I'm going to move to Frank in West Los Angeles calling in because he has a comment here or something to share with us that really adds to what I've been saying here. So, Frank, what have you got to say?
Hey, Ken, you really teed it up, too, because it's really what my takeaway on, you know, the equality of and dignity of human life. I learned from working and living in India for 6 years, and I can tell you I've never heard anybody on the radio ever bring up Sethi in the United States. I was actually dear friends with Mela Sen, who wrote the book The Burning Bed, which brought to the world this ritual. But what I learned, and really to the point of the show about the existence of God versus, you know, an accidental evolution, came to me through converts in India that had converted to Christianity. Yes. And how their lived experience changed through the compassionate love that comes through the Holy Spirit. And I think compassionate love is the one thing that you can point to that is supernatural, that evidences God and really creates the standard of an objective morality. Because what I learned from a lot of the Christian Indians in India, yes, had a lot to do with the things like Sati, where Sati was, you know, the practicality of throwing the widow onto the pyre was so that she wouldn't, like, have to go begging in the streets. And also was witness to infanticide, female infanticide, and that was in South India and many other parts of India, is seen as very practical because it's a very poor family that will not be able to afford the dowry, and they feel like they're doing a favor to the widow and to the baby. But once many of these people would convert to Christianity, they would realize, and wait a minute, through compassionate love, every life is valuable. There is no poor or rich standard of yes, valuation of humanity, and that comes yeah, from compassionate.
Yeah, a shift. A shift in worldview is occurring. Listen, Frank, I want to ask you to remain on the line. We're going to take a short break, but I want to ask you to say something about the caste system. You say that you lived and you worked in India for 6 years. And we can talk a little bit more about this idea of equal value. So we'll be right back. 888-914-9149. Frank, please stay on the line.
Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester, an Illinois life insurance company not available in all states.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I hope this is encouraging. I hope it is encouraging to those of you that are Catholic, to those of you who are Christian, to those of you who believe in God. Your view of the universe, your worldview makes sense and can account for the intuitive belief that we have that right and wrong are real, that they really exist, that there is such a thing as morality, and that it's not just make it up on the fly from person to person or society to society. And the same thing with human value, the intuitive sense that we have, that human beings have inherent intrinsic value, not simply value that we give to one another, but value, high value and equal value. And I asked Frank to stay on the line because Frank has lived and worked in India for 6 years. And I just wanted to ask you, because this whole, you know, embedded in the Hindu worldview over many, many, over long periods of time, was this idea of the caste system in India, which is basically a way of saying that human beings do not have equal value. Is this correct? Can you comment on that? Frank?
I mean, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That is it. I mean, obviously there's a lot of modernism in India that has maybe assisted that. But I mean, from the standpoint of what they're taught, they believe that, you know, they've basically been given a lot in life, and it's their role this time around. And you know, if you ask a lot of the, you know, people who come from the upper caste, they said, no, the caste system is no longer in India. But if you ask the elites, who I worked with a lot, they say, yeah, it's very much well and alive. And honestly, many Hindus have converted to Christianity, to Catholicism, as an escape, to basically reclaim their life and reclaim the equality of their own dignity. I'm trying not to say anything negative about Hindu, Hinduism, because I have very fine friends. But yeah, that is their system.
Well, Frank, thanks for calling in today. Your comments remind me, I listened to a lecture by a historian named Tom Holland. He's a kind of a famous historian. There's written a lot of books. And his study was in the classical period of Greece and Rome. And in one lecture I listened to, in fact, it was just about 2 weeks ago. It was called Why I Changed My Mind About Christianity. I found it on YouTube. It was a really interesting lecture. He basically said that when he was studying the Greek and the Roman world, he wanted to climb into the minds of people then and understand how they viewed the world. And he said the more that he did this, the more depressing it became, because he realized these people did not believe in the value of human life in the same way that he had come to believe it, growing up and living in a world that has basically become a Christian world over centuries. He said that at the time, you know, the in the Roman world, the man, the ruler of the house, you know, he could do anything he wanted to with his slaves. I mean, he could take a slave and just kill him. He could just, you know, a slave steal something. He could just have it, or he could just give the order to have the slave whipped to death. And he could do anything he wanted to with his, with children and with slaves and all that. I mean, he could, you know, commit sexual violence against them every day of his life. And he said, this is just the way the world was then. The world, the way people thought. And what began to strike him, he said, was the absolutely incredible moral revolution that Christianity brought into the world. Because here comes St. Paul. Okay, in a world where you could take your slave and just throw him off a cliff if you wanted, St. Paul comes in saying, in Christ, all are one. There is no more male or female, slave or free, Jew or Gentile. And he was talking about the fact that Christianity brought a moral revolution into the world that has so deeply been embedded in our culture and our world that he said even those who reject Christianity now and who mock Christianity, they still live within essentially a world in which their moral sensibilities have been formed by Christianity. And therefore, when they think of putting the widow of a man who has died in India alive on the funeral pyre to burn her, I mean, maybe their minds say to them, maybe their minds tell them that to be consistent, they have to say, no, this is okay. Who are we to judge? But they know in their heart of hearts that this is barbaric, incredibly barbaric. Okay, a few more phone calls in the short time that we have. Let's go to Marco. Marco from Chandler, Arizona, calling in. How are you doing today, Marco? Good to have you on the
Hi
show.
Hi there. I'm doing great. Thank you. I was calling. I had a friend who invited me to go with him to Mass later today at the Newman Center at Arizona State. I'm a chrismated Eastern Orthodox Christian, so I was wondering, I'm going to go. What should I do to show respect? What can I participate in the liturgy? And what is the Newman Center, really?
Well, the Newman Center is it's named after a very famous convert from Anglicanism to Catholicism in the 19th century, John Henry Newman. And so the Newman Center are centers that have come to exist on college campuses where Catholics get together, you know, and with others as well, to talk about the faith, to study, to learn. And there will be a priest on campus, and so Mass will be said at the Newman Center. So it functions as a, you know, a Catholic church as well. Now, you know what? One thing about doing radio for Patrick Madrid is that I realize how many millions of questions there are that I have never thought about. And so I do know that the opposite direction that Roman Catholics are taught, that they may receive communion in an Eastern Orthodox church because the Eucharist is considered to be valid. The priesthood is considered to be valid, and the Eucharist is valid. And so Catholics can, although it's not the optimum, can receive in an Orthodox church. My understanding is that the Orthodox Church does not allow that. So from the Orthodox side, no one should be receiving communion except someone who is Orthodox. But I don't know, truthfully, I don't know how to answer your question exactly.
Well, that's all right.
And I'm sorry you're doing it today. I can't. Yeah, go ahead. What did your bishop say?
Yeah. My bishop told me that I can receive communion.
Okay.
In the Roman Catholic Church, though it's not ideal, but it would be part of the liturgy. So I just wanted to see if I was allowed to do that from the Catholic point of view.
Yeah, and that's what I'm sorry to say that I don't have a definitive answer on that. What I can tell you is that both Orthodox and Roman Catholic churches believe that their holy orders are valid and believe that their sacraments are valid. And so it's a valid sacrament, and so I would think you should be able to share, but I don't know if there's kind of a little rule about it. I apologize for not knowing that. And but I would think that if your bishop has told you that you can, that you could follow that, you can trust the word of your bishop and move forward.
All right.
Okay, Marco.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, wish I could have been more helpful to you. God bless you, Marco. And let's go to Fred. Fred in Orlando, Florida.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank
you,
Fred,
for taking my call. A couple of scriptures about 20 minutes ago came to mind. When you were on a different subject or a similar subject, but I think answering these questions are very good that we ask them and ask them together and talk about them. The one is in Ecclesiastes, maybe the most underrated book in the Bible, who knows whether the spirit of the human goes upward and the spirit, something like that, spirit of the animal or beast goes downward. We don't know. And unless we ask God. And then another scripture, which is written on one of the windows of my car, it says that the natural or the physical is first, the spiritual is not. You can't have the spiritual without the physical. So I believe that we get our human spirit as an automatic, and I know the catechism, I'm Protestant, I guess, speaks against traducianism, which it means you get your soul from the parents. I say we get everything from God, but our parents are the instrument that gives us our soul. And that's why we're the residue of the spirit in the King James there at Malachi. And and that's why the unbelieving spouse is made holy by my belief. And my children are holy because of my belief, especially when they're younger. But, the earth itself is wearing out, the whole universe is. And that's another thing that came to mind. But God is part of it all.
Okay, Fred, let me respond to what you said a bit because we only have a short time. Thanks so much for calling in today. Okay, for one thing, Fred, you mentioned a couple of verses, and each verse in Scripture, each passage has to be read within its own, you know, literary context, that is within the book, cultural, historical context. The passage you read about, first comes the physical, then comes the spiritual. In the context of that, St. Paul is talking about the human body, or the natural body coming first, and then the spiritual body coming later. So he's speaking about something specifically. He's not making a universal statement that natural comes and then spiritual comes. He's not making a universal statement that I would want to quickly apply to everything. He's talking about something specifically. Now, there are a lot of verses that mention atheism in the Bible. You know, Psalm 14, which says, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God." And the other passages that I read, Romans chapter 1, that says that the things of God, his nature, are clearly seen. We're running out of time. It's so good to be with you. My name is Ken Hensley. It's great to be with you on the Patrick Madrid Show today. God bless you all, and we'll talk to you again soon.